I'm Patricia Camilleri, Director of the Communications and Alumni Relations Office here at the University of Malta. In this series called Research Matters, I shall be discussing the many research projects undertaken by the university's academics from all fields of study.
My guests in the studio today are Dr. Carmel Cefai and Dr. Liberato Camilleri. They've come together to do a very interesting piece of research which has resulted in a publication called Healthy Students, Healthy Lives. Just before we begin to talk about the work, I'd just like to say a few words about them both. Dr. Cefai is the director of the European Centre for Educational Resilience and Socio-Emotional Health and a lecturer in psychology at the University of Malta. He's a visiting fellow at the School of Education at the University of Leicester in UK. He studied education and psychology here at the university and various universities in the UK, completing his PhD in educational resilience at the University of London. He's published works in his own name and also in collaboration with his colleague, Dr. Liberato Camilleri. And he's co-editor of the International Journal of Emotional Education and joint chair of the European Network for Social and Emotional Competence. He's the coordinator of an international research project on the promotion of mental health in children and young people. And his research interests include social and emotional literacy in schools, educational resilience and socio-emotional health in childhood and adolescence. Dr. Liberato Camilleri is a lecturer in statistics at our Faculty of Science. He studied mathematics and statistics here at the university and received his PhD in applied statistics in 2005 from Lancaster University in the UK. His research specialisation areas are related to statistical models, which include generalised linear models, latent class models, multi-level models, random coefficient models and survival models. Liberato is the author of several papers published in statistical journals and many conference proceedings. Dr. Camilleri also co-authored a number of publications with local and foreign researchers in several fields of application, including neural networks, operations research, market research, education and atmospheric chemistry. He's also contributing in a research project to devise a standardized test that measures spelling and reading abilities of school children. He's a member of the International Scientific Committee, COSME, C-O-S-M-E. Welcome to you both. We had heard in recent weeks about this piece of work. I think it did raise a lot of interest, actually, both among students themselves here at the university and their parents and staff. And I know that you had a lot of interest when you actually launched this the publication and sort of went public on the findings. What was the reason for embarking on this project and what was really the objective of the study, Dr. Cefai?
Thank you very much for the invitation. In fact, this project, you can say, owes its origin to the students themselves. During our lectures, students repeatedly complained about the long hours of uninterrupted lectures, having no time to have breaks, you know, having too many exams on the same day, feeling so tired and stressed. They complained about, for example, the food available to them, finding a parking place, and it was this which eventually triggered our interest to find whether there is any concrete evidence, besides, of course, these are the realities of the students, but we wanted to know to what extent were these difficulties represented in the general student population. So what we tried to do in this project was to examine students' views and concerns about various aspects of their health and well-being. And we took health in the very general sense. So we looked at physical health, mental health, socio-emotional well-being, sexual health. We looked at health habits and lifestyle. And we also looked at aspects of academic life, their engagement in the learning process, So we can say the students were the inspiration behind this project, and as well they were in a way the main stakeholders. We wanted to give them a voice. How is it to be a university student at the University of Malta? And our main focus was how can the university help to create a context which make students healthier, basically, which help them to make the healthier choice.
So you had anecdotal evidence.
Yes.
And what you were trying to do was put it on a scientific footing, really.
And we think it's very important to look at university students' health for various reasons. We know that stress, anxiety, and other emotional difficulties interfere with their academic performance. We know that health habits established in adolescence and young adulthood are difficult to change and highly subject to relapse, and that these habits have a negative impact on their health later on in life. And we also know that if a student, for example, are working at a heightened level of stress as students, then if they get used to that level, then they are likely to go out and start their career and keep working at that high level of stress, which may be highly damaging to their health and may lead to premature death. So, and usually these are going to be the leaders in the Maltese community. So it's very important for us in society that we don't lose these students at a premature age. And finally, because also they are leaders, they are more likely to have influence on policies regarding health. So these are some of the various reasons we thought it's important to carry out this study.
Dr. Camilleri, when we talk about putting it on a scientific footing, what do we really mean when it comes to the methodology?
We selected a random sample of about 500 students, which comprised about 7% of the university students. We stratified the students mainly by gender and faculty. Now, in order to simplify the analysis, we decided to cluster the 12 faculties, which are available in our university, into four cluster groups. Now, what we did is that we gave the questionnaire to the students at around May, and from the questionnaires we entered the data into SPSS, which is a very well known package, and used two statistical tests to analyze the data. Basically, the chi-square test was used to determine whether there exist significant associations between categorical variables, and was used extensively throughout the study, and of course the one-way ANOVA to determine whether scores obtained for various quantitative variables differ significantly between the categories of the independent variable. For each test we use a 0.05 level of significance, which is used in most studies. So basically we didn't simply collect the data and just produce a number of graphs or a number of tables, but we made inferences from a very randomly selected sample to make inferences about the population. Statistics is essential to make good inferences. If you don't use statistics, then your study is not so worthy.
So you were using a questionnaire, which obviously would give you this quantitative information, which would lead you to be able to use the statistics that mm-hmm. are created through it. Did you do any qualitative analysis at all, or 500 people would be a lot to ask questions to?
Yes, of course. Basically, the questionnaire was divided into four parts. The first section included details of demographic variables and course-related variables, such as gender, course year, nationality. We also included the home region, where the student come from, his social economic status. And these variables, most of these variables, were used as predictors of student health. Then basically we asked a number of questions related mostly to lifestyles, physical health, social and emotional well-being, and students' life at university. And these variables, these questions, were analyzed through these demographic and cause-related variables using the two tests I mentioned before.
We really need to come to the results, of course, of this. As you've said, you sort of divided up the areas of interest into physical and mental health, lifestyle and health habits, and academic life. So what did we find out about some of the salient points, say, of the physical and mental health of the students? What came out?
Yes, in fact, it was an extensive study, and we recommend that those who are interested can have a copy of this, detailed copy of this project from our center. But basically, for example, we found that 90% of the students reported that they feel healthy and did not miss more than 5 days of university because of physical complaints. On the other hand, 65% said they suffered at least from one form of physical or psychological condition. Of these, back pain is the most common physical complaint, about 41%, followed by common infections and allergies, while anxiety and depression are the most common psychological conditions. Sexually transmitted diseases and HIV infection are not common, that common among the students. However, then, so physically the students do not seem to be suffering that much. Their main problem appear to be, I mean, one has to keep in mind, we are talking here about a select group, 20 to 25-year-old students who are not supposed to be suffering from any physical complaints. These usually are the group who use the health services least. However, about two-thirds feel frequently overwhelmed, exhausted, and stressed out. More than half regularly exhausted. One-third do not get enough sleep. And one-fourth often feel depressed, helpless, or hopeless. About 8% feel chronically depressed, and 4% contemplate suicide, like in the last semester.
How does that stand statistically compared to other countries? Were you able to make any comparisons of that nature? Because I think suicide is something that tendencies, obviously not the suicide, so tendencies have been widely looked into all over Europe and
in
the US.
The studies compare, our study compare very well with what's happening abroad. So why, if we take, for example, these psychosomatic symptoms like depression, suicide, anxiety, these tend to be higher than one would expect at this age. However, these are lower, for example, if we take suicide, it's the 4% contemplate, not attempted.
Obviously.
There was 1% of suicide attempt. Is relatively lower when compared to universities abroad. So when we take the whole picture in general, most of our students seem to have a healthier life in its various aspects when compared to international students. However, we have to be careful. That doesn't, we must not rest on our laurels, so to speak. For example, stress is one of the main issues which came out in our study. Two-thirds of the students find university life stressful, of which one-third find it very stressful, especially females and final years students. And what were students stressed most about? 83% find tests and examination most stressful, followed by too many assignments and projects, too many lectures, work behind schedule, so course-related stressors. On the other hand, though, our students appear to have good coping strategies, for example, talking with friends, and better organization of work are the two most frequently used coping strategies. And we find there is a gender bias difference that females use more balanced coping strategies than males. Males tend to use more palliative coping strategies, such as smoking, for example, or alcohol. In fact, we found about 20% use comfort eating, and 10% alcohol or smoking to cope with their stressors.
What about their lifestyle in general? I mean, you mentioned drinking there. I think this was something that came up, and I'm sure lots of parents will have, their antenna will have gone up when they heard the word drink, because it's become such an issue, really.
In fact, we subdivided lifestyle into six sections. We analyzed diet, exercise, physical appearance and weight. We also analyzed tobacco smoking, alcohol abuse, substance abuse, and sexual health. Basically, with regards to alcohol, we found that the alcohol is the drug of choice. Astonishingly, we found that about 90% of the students do have alcohol drinks regularly or rarely sometimes, and only 10% stated that they do not have alcohol at all. In fact, it was a black mark.
Teetotalers.
It was a black mark for the students. We found that males tend to drink more alcohol than females. However, the difference was not found to be significant. We also found that 13% of the students binge drink on a regular basis. About 2/3 consume more alcohol than that recommended, whereas 38% of those who consume alcohol have more than 6 alcohol drinks when socializing, which is very worrying. About 12% of all alcohol drinking engage in heavy drinking at least twice a week, and 17% once a week. As I mentioned before, male students tend to drink more heavily than females. We also found that 8% of those who drink frequently do so under the influence of alcohol. So they drive under the influence of alcohol. 8% had problems with their studies because of alcohol. 6% had unprotected sex under the influence of alcohol. Whereas 5% injured themselves when they were under the influence of alcohol, and 2% abuse of drugs. We also asked the students what are the factors which may reduce, get rid of this alcohol abuse. And 17% stated that less stress would definitely help them to consume less alcohol. Whereas about 10% suggested a more alcohol-free environment. And almost half of the students stated that they do not feel, this is worrying, half of the students stated that they do not feel the need for help to reduce alcohol consumption, which is very, very worrying.
Well, if we're thinking about long-term health issues that Dr. Shafai was mentioning before, I mean, here the alarm bells should be ringing loud
exactly.
In the right places.
With regards to smoking, it was a nicer picture because almost 80% of the students don't smoke at all, and only 12% smoke regularly. We also found that a large proportion of the students of those who smoke smoke less than 10 cigarettes weekly, which is not so bad. With regards to drug abuse, we're perhaps slightly better than other universities we've analyzed abroad. About 21% of the students use illicit substance in their lifetime. They could have used it only once. 17% used it in the last year, and 10% used it in the last month. Undoubtedly, cannabis turns out to be the most frequent used illicit substance, with about 10% making use of it in the last month. This is followed by cocaine, there were about 4%, tranquilizers, sleeping pills, inhalants, ecstasy, and amphetamines. We also found that males tend to use to abuse of drugs more frequently and more often than females, with the exception of tranquilizers and sleeping pills. In fact, with tranquilizers and sleeping pills, we found that a higher proportion of females tend to abuse of this substance. We also found that about 8% of those who use drugs, not the whole population, 8% of those who use drugs do so on a daily basis, and in most cases they smoke cannabis. We also found that heroin is rarely used by students. In fact, there was only 0.5% who said that they got in touch with heroin. So our students are not addicted to very hard drugs. As I mentioned before, males are more likely to use the illicit substance than females, whereas females tend to use the tranquilizers and sleeping pills more than males. 35% think that less stress due to examinations will help them to get rid of the habit. This was followed by more awareness of the hazards of drugs abuse and less accessibility in places of entertainment. With regards to diet, I should mention as well that half the students said that they have at most 2 servings of fruit and vegetables daily. Indeed, this is much less than the 5% requested by the World Health Organization. And we found that only about 7% do satisfy this requirement.
They're all eating junk food,
yes, yes. In fact, especially the males are not very cautious about their diet. With regards to drink, it's a different story. In fact, the great majority chose healthier drinks. But about one third specified that they drink soft drinks on a regular basis, which is still a little bit worrying. But about 80%, 85%, in fact, drink water regularly. So that was a good sign. Interestingly, that although students in the recommendation section strongly recommend healthier food in the canteen and in vending machines, then, however, when we analyzed what type of food they eat, we were a little bit disappointed. We also noted that females tend to eat healthier food than males, and they are more cautious about their diet. With regards to exercise, we found that 37% engage in regular exercise, while 34% are practically inactive and don't exercise at all. We found higher proportion of males doing vigorous exercise and higher proportion of females completely inactive. In fact, the difference was found to be statistically significant, and it could be generalized. So in this area, the boys are doing better than the girls. However, about 90% of the students stated that they see regular physical exercise as one of the improvement of their health.
They're just not prepared to actually do it themselves.
They recognize that it is
important,
but they don't like to practice it. We also found out that 36% of the students do not feel they have the right weight, and 25% describe themselves as being overweight. 11% describe themselves as underweight. What is interesting is that we found more males rather than females who describe themselves as underweight, and more females rather than males who describe themselves as overweight.
There must be something going on there.
I don't know. What is interesting that almost 95% of those students who stated that they are overweight are in fact on a diet or intend to go on a diet, but there was hardly nobody who is underweight who is on a diet or intend to go on a diet. One last thing about sexual health is that we found that about half of the participants are sexually active. We found that about 45% do not have a sexual partner, and about 50% are sexually active. About 10% stated that they have more than two sexual partners. What we mean by two sexual partners, it means that not simultaneously, they may be in different stages, but 10% stated that they have at least two sexual partners. Only half of those sexually active often use condoms. And this is a little bit worrying. However, we found that females tend to use condoms more than males. And in a final question, we asked them whether they have any sexual transmitted diseases. And one person stated that they have these type of diseases, but nobody stated that he is infected with HIV.
Before, we were talking about the problems of academic life. The stress created by examinations, etc. What were the questions really you were asking about the academic side of their lives?
I think it's a good question, actually, because we did not look at academic life in its entirety. We looked at aspects of academic life. I mean, that could have constituted a whole study in itself. So what we wanted to know is issues like how motivated and engaged are the students, how participative they are in the lectures, to what extent they participate in decisions. So basically that was where was we mostly focused on. And then we looked at the type of support they get from colleagues, lecturers, and non-academic stuff.
The mention of stress, really, you said that you are worried that if they're stressed here in university, then they might continue to live on the adrenaline sometime of stress as well. You get used to that adrenaline rush, and then nothing satisfies you after that, even if it's in a negative rather than a positive way. Could it be that these students have brought this sense of anxiety from the school itself, or are we the ogres here at university that we give them these stressful feelings?
I think we are part of the ogres. I think it's a whole system starting from very early in children's life, at very vulnerable age, especially the 11 plus, when students have to sit for the 11 plus junior lyceum examination. Like, we have research from other studies which shows that 11, 12-year-old students are highly stressed at this time. And like the WHO study, the HBSC study, found that like 13-year-old Maltese students are some of the most highest stressed students in Europe. So it looks like here it's a continuation of the system, but could be it then seems to be getting worse.
Aggravated in some way. Well,
like with so many examinations, like continuous assessment. And
continuous assessment is a wonderful thing in some ways. I remember appreciating it very much as a student. But yes, it means that you have to be on the go the whole time. There's no let up at all. And this fantastic study, this rather thick book that you've produced from this survey, where will you go with this information? I mean, here you've spent a lot of time on it, the students have spent time on it, you've have obviously some very interesting and, as you have pointed out, Dr. Camilleri, statistically viable results. Is this a book that our policymakers should be taking seriously?
Yes, we were very encouraged when we launched the seminar in the KSU house. On one side of the table, there was the pro-rector in charge of students' welfare, and on the other hand was the KSU president. And we think that with such key stakeholders taking part in the seminar, that this will not remain a publication, an academic exercise. From the feedback we got from both these two key stakeholders is that this will serve to review some of the policies and to bring about a change too, so that the university will operate more as a health-promoting institution, as we are suggesting.
We made a number of suggestions that would be very helpful to these policymakers. It was not simply presenting the results and do some statistics and that's it, but we presented a number of suggestions which Carmel worked on, and I think...
Both of us. Mm-hmm. For example, we made three sets of recommendations. One of them is the establishment of a student health and wellness center in the student house, which will make use of the existing services, but expand on them and bring more healthcare professionals, such as people trained in health promotion, sports coordinators, medical professionals, making use also of peer education programs.
Well, and lots of others, I'm sure. I'd like to thank you both very, very much for coming to talk to us about this extremely interesting and valuable survey. Thank you, Dr. Carmel Chafai and Dr. Liberato Camilleri, for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.